Part 4. Crusade's End. Brothers. Assassination. This turbulent poet. Silver trails of molten metal had solidified on the breastplate, and Mercedes Ollerton had learned enough in her time with the expedition fleet to know that it would require the aid of Legion artificers to repair it properly. Loken sat before her in the training halls, while other officers of the Sons of Horus were scattered throughout it, repairing armour and cleaning bolters or chainswords. Loken was melancholic, and she was quick to notice his sombre mood. "Is the war not going well?" she asked, as he removed the firing chamber from his bolter and pulled a cleaning rag through it. He looked up, and she was struck by how much he had aged in the last 10 months, thinking that she would need to revise her chapter on the immortality of the Astartes. Since opening hostilities against the Orishan technocracy, the Astartes had seen some of the hardest fighting since the Great Crusade had begun, and it was beginning to tell on many of them. There had been few opportunities to spend time with Loken during the war, and it was only now that she truly appreciated how much he had changed.
"It's not that," said Loken. "The Brotherhood is virtually destroyed, and the warriors of Angron will soon storm the Iron Citadel. The war will be over within the week."
"Then why so gloomy?"
Loken glanced around to see who else was in the training halls and leaned in close to her.
"Because this is a war we should not be fighting."
Upon Horus's recovery on Davin, the fleet of the 63rd Expedition had paused just long enough to recover its personnel from the planet's surface and install a new Imperial commander from the ranks of the army. Like Rakris before him, the new Lord Governor-elect, Tormas Vesalius, had begged not to be left behind, but with Davin once again compliant, Imperial rule had to be maintained. Before the fighting on Davin, the War Master's fleet had been en route to Sardis and a rendezvous with the 203rd Fleet. The plan was to undertake a campaign of compliance in the Caerdes Cluster, but instead of keeping that rendezvous, the War Master had sent his compliments and ordered the 203rd's Master of Ships to muster with the 63rd Expedition in a binary cluster designated Draconis 311. The War Master told no one why he chose this locale, and none of the stellar cartographers could find reports from any previous expedition as to why this place might be of interest. 16 weeks of warp travel had seen them translate into a system alive with electronic chatter. 2 planets and their shared moon in the second system were discovered to be inhabited, glinting communication satellites ringing each one, and interplanetary craft flitting between them. More thrilling still, communications with orbital monitors revealed this civilization to be human, another lost branch of the old race, isolated these past centuries. The arrival of the Crusade fleet had been greeted with understandable surprise, and then joy as the planet's inhabitants realized that their lonely existence was finally at an end. Formal face-to-face contact was not established for 3 days, in which time the 203rd Expedition, under the command of Angron of the 12th Legion, the World Eaters, translated in system. The first shots were fired 6 hours later. The 9th month of the war. Bolter shells stitched a path towards Loken from the blazing muzzle of the bunker's gun. He ducked behind a shell-pocked cement column, feeling the impacts hammering through it and knowing that he didn't have much time until the gunfire chewed its way through.
"Garvey!" shouted Torgadon, rolling from behind cover and shouldering his bolter. "Go left! I've got you!"
Loken nodded and dived from behind the cover as Torgadon opened up, his Astartes strength keeping the barrel level despite the bolter's fearsome recoil. Shells exploded in grey puffs of rockcrete at the bunker's firing slit, and Loken heard screams of pain from within. Locasta moved up behind him, and he heard the whoosh of flame units as warriors poured fire into the bunker. More screams, and the stink of flesh burned by chemical flame filled the air.
"Everyone back!"
shouted Loken, getting to his feet and knowing what would come next. Sure enough, the bunker mushroomed upwards with a thudding boom, its internal magazine cooking off as its internal sensors registered that its occupants were dead. Heavy gunfire ripped through their position,
a collapsed structure at the edge of the central precinct of the planet's towering city of steel and glass. Loken had marveled at the city's elegance, and Peter Egon Momus had declared it perfect when he had first seen the aerial scans. It didn't look perfect now. Puffs of flickering detonations tore a line through the Astartes, and Loken dropped as the warrior with the flame unit disappeared in a column of fire. His armor kept him alive for a few seconds, but soon he was a burning statue. The armor joints fused, and Loken rolled onto his back to see a pair of speeding aircraft rolling around for another strafing run.
"Take those ships out!" yelled Loken, as the craft, sleeker, more elegant Thunderhawk variants, turned their guns towards them once again.
The Astartes spread out as the underslung gun pods erupted in fire, and a torrent of shells tore through their position, ripping thick columns in two and sending up blinding clouds of grey dust. Two warriors ducked out from behind a fallen wall, one aiming a long missile tube in the rough direction of the flyer, while the other sighted on it with a designator. The missile launched in a streaming cloud of bright propellant, leaping into the sky and speeding after the closest flyer. The pilot saw it and tried to evade, but he was too close to the ground, and the missile flew straight into his intake, blowing the craft apart from the inside. Its blazing remains plummeted towards the ground as Vipers shouted, "Incoming!" Loken turned to rebuke him for stating the obvious when he saw that his friend wasn't talking about the remaining flyer. Three tracked vehicles smashed over a low ceramic brick wall behind them, their thick armored forward sections emblazoned with a pair of crossed lightning bolts. Too late, Loken realized the flyers had been keeping them pinned in place, while the armored transports circled around to flank them. Through the smoking wreckage of the burning bunker, he could see blurred forms moving towards them, darting from cover to cover as they advanced. Lacasta was caught between two enemy forces, and the noose was closing in. Loken chopped his hand at the approaching vehicles, and the missile team turned to engage their new targets. Within seconds, one was a smoking wreck as a missile punched through its armor, and its plasma core exploded inside.
"Tarek!" he shouted over the din of gunfire from nearby. "Keep our front secure!"
Torgadon nodded, moving forwards with five warriors. Leaving him to it, Loken turned back towards the armored vehicles as they crunched to a halt, pintle-mounted bolters hammering them with shots. Two men fell, their armor cracked open by the heavy shells.
"Close on them!"
ordered Loken, as the frontal assault ramps lowered, and the Brotherhood warriors within charged out. The first few times Loken had fought the Brotherhood, he'd felt a treacherous hesitation seize his limbs, but 9 months of grueling campaigning had pretty much cured him of that. Each warrior was armored in fully enclosed plate, silver like the knights of old, with red and black heraldry upon their shoulder guards. Their form and function was horribly similar to that of the Sons of Horus, and though the enemy warriors were smaller than the Astartes, they were nevertheless a distorted mirror of them. Loken and the warriors of Lacasta were upon them, the lead Brotherhood warriors raising their weapons in response to the wild charge. The blade of Loken's chainsword hacked through the nearest warrior's gun and cleaved into his breastplate. The Brotherhood scattered, but Loken didn't give them a chance to recover from their surprise, cutting them down in quick, brutal strokes. These warriors might look like Astartes, but up close, they were no match for even one of them. He heard gunfire from behind, and heard Torgadon issuing orders to the men under his command. Stuttering impacts on Loken's leg armor drove him to his knees, and he swept his sword low, hacking the legs from the enemy warrior behind him. Blood jetted from the stumps of his legs as he fell, spraying Loken's armor red. The vehicle began reversing, but Loken threw a pair of grenades inside, moving on as the dull crump of the detonations halted it in its tracks. Shadows loomed over them, and he felt the booming footfalls of the Titans of the Legio Mortis as they marched past, crushing whole swathes of the city as they went. Buildings were smashed from their path, and though missiles and lasers reached up to them, the flare of their powerful void shields were proof against such attacks. More gunfire and screams filled the battlefield, the enemy falling back from the fury of the Astartes' counterattack. They were courageous, these warriors of the Brotherhood, but they were hopelessly optimistic if they thought that simply wearing a suit of power armor made a man the equal of an Astartes.
"Area secure," came Torgadon's voice over the suit vox. "Where to now?"
"Nowhere," replied Loken,
as the last enemy warrior was slain.
This is our object point. We wait until the World Eaters get here. Once we hand off to them, we can move on. Pass the word.
Understood, said Torgadon.
Loken savored the sudden quiet of the battlefield, the sounds of battle muted and distant, as other companies fought their way through the city. He assigned vipers to secure their perimeter and crouched beside the warrior whose legs he had cut off. The man still lived, and Loken reached down to remove his helmet, a helmet so very similar to his own. He knew where the release catches were and slid the helm clear. His enemy's face was pale from shock and blood loss, his eyes full of pain and hate, but there were no monstrously alien features beneath the helmet, simply ones as human as any member of the 63rd Expedition. Loken could think of nothing to say to the man, and simply took off his own helmet and pulled the water-dispensing pipe from his gorget. He poured some clear, cold water over the man's face.
"I want nothing from you,"
hissed the dying man.
"Don't speak," said Loken. "It will be over quickly."
But the man was already dead. "Why shouldn't we be fighting this war?" asked Mercedy Ollerton. "You were there when they tried to assassinate the War Master."
"I was there," said Loken,
putting down the cleaned firing chamber.
"I don't think I'll ever forget that moment."
"Tell me about it."
"It's not pretty," warned Loken. "You will think less of us when I tell you the truth of it."
"You think so? A good documentarist remains objective at all times."
"We'll see."
The ambassadors of the planet, which Loken had learned was named Aureus, had been greeted with all the usual pomp and ceremony accorded to a potentially friendly culture. Their vessels had glided onto the embarkation deck to surprised gasps, as every warrior present recognized their uncanny similarity to Stormbirds. The War Master was clad in his most regal armor, gold-fluted and decorated with the Emperor's devices of lightning bolts and eagles. Unusually, for an occasion such as this, he was armed with a sword and pistol, and Loken could feel the force of authority the War Master projected. Alongside the War Master stood Malachurst, robed in white, Regulus, his gold and steel augmetic body polished to a brilliant sheen, and First Captain Abaddon, who stood proudly with a detachment of hulking Justerian Terminators. It was a gesture to show strength, and, backing it up, 300 Sons of Horus stood at parade rest behind the group, noble and regal in their bearing. The very image of the Great Crusade, and Loken had never been prouder of his illustrious heritage. The doors of the craft opened with a hiss of decompression, and Loken had his first glimpse of the Brotherhood. A ripple of astonishment passed through the embarkation deck, as 20 warriors in gleaming silver plate armor, the very image of the assembled Astartes, marched from the landing craft's interior in perfect formation, though Loken detected a stammer of surprise in them, too. They carried weapons that looked very much like a standard-issue bolt gun, though in deference to their hosts, none had magazines fitted.
"Do you see that?"
whispered Loken.
"No, Garvey, I've suddenly been struck blind," replied Torgadon. "Of course I see them.
They look like Astartes. There's a resemblance, I'll give you that, but they're far too short. They're wearing power armor. How is that possible?"
"If you keep quiet, we might find out," said Torgadon.
The warriors wheeled and formed up around a tall man wearing long red robes, whose features were half flesh, half machine, and whose eye was a blinking emerald gem. Walking with the aid of a golden cog-topped staff, he stepped onto the deck with the pleased expression of one who finds his expectations more than met. The Aurician delegation made its way towards Horus, and Loken could sense the weight of history pressing in on this moment. This meeting was the very embodiment of what the Great Crusade represented. Lost brothers from across the galaxy once again meeting in the spirit of companionship. The red-robed man bowed before the War Master and said,
"Do I have the honor of addressing the War Master Horus?"
"You do, sir, but please do not bow," replied Horus. "The honor is mine."
The man smiled, pleased at the courtesy.
"Then, if you will permit me, I will introduce myself. I am Emery Salignac, fabricator consul to the Aurician technocracy. On behalf of my people, may I be the first to welcome you to our worlds?"
Loken had seen Regulus's excitement at the sight of Salignac's augmetics, but upon hearing the full title of this new empire, his enthusiasm overcame the protocol of the moment.
"Consul," said Regulus, his voice blaring and unnatural, "do I understand that your society is founded on the knowledge of technical data?"
Horus turned to the adept of the Mechanicum and whispered something that Loken didn't hear, but Regulus nodded and took a step back.
"I apologize for the adept's forthright questions, but I hope you might forgive his outburst, given that our warriors appear to share certain similarities in their war gear."
"They are the warriors of the Brotherhood," explained Salaknak. "They are our protectors and our most elite soldiers. It honors me to have them as my guardians here."
"How is it they are armored so similarly to my own warriors?"
Salaknak appeared to be confused by the question and said, "You expected something different, my Lord Warmaster?" "The construct machines our ancestors brought with them from Terra are at the heart of our society, and provide us with the boon of technology. Though advanced, they do tend towards a certain uniformity of creation."
The silence that greeted the consul's words was brittle and fragile, and Horus held up his hand to still the inevitable outburst from Regulus.
"Construct machines?" asked Horus,
a cold edge of steel in his voice.
"STC machines?"
"I believe that was their original designation, yes," agreed Salaknak,
lowering his staff and holding it towards the Warmaster.
"You have—"
Emery Salaknak never got to finish his sentence, as Horus took a step backward and drew his pistol. Loken saw the muzzle flash and watched Emery Salignac's head explode as the bolt blew out the back of his skull.
"Yes," said Mercedes Ollerton. "The staff was some kind of energy weapon that could have penetrated the Warmaster's armor. We've been told this."
Loken shook his head.
"No. There was no weapon."
"Of course there was," insisted Ollerton. "And when the consul's assassination attempt failed, his Brotherhood warriors attacked the Warmaster."
Loken put down his bolter and said,
"Mercedes, forget what you have been told. There was no weapon, and after the Warmaster killed the consul, the Brotherhood only tried to escape. Their weapons were not loaded, and they could not have fought us with any hope of success."
"They were unarmed?"
"Yes."
"So what did you do?"
"We killed them," said Loken. "They were unarmed, but we were not. Abaddon's Justerin cut half a dozen of them down before they even knew what had happened. I led Locusta forward, and we gunned them down as they tried to board their ship."
"But why?" asked Ollerton, horrified at his casual description of such slaughter.
"Because the Warmaster ordered it."
"No, I mean, why would the Warmaster shoot the consul if he wasn't armed? It doesn't make any sense."
"No, it doesn't," agreed Loken. "I watched him kill the consul, and I saw his face after we had killed the Brotherhood warriors."
"What did you see?"
Loken hesitated, as though not sure he should answer. At last he said,
"I saw him smile."
"Smile?"
"Yes," said Loken, "as if the killings had been part of his plan all along. I don't know why, but Horus wants this war."
Torgadon followed the hooded warrior down the darkened companionway towards the empty reserve armory chamber. Sergar Targost had called a lodge meeting, and Torgadon was apprehensive, not liking the sensation one bit. He had attended only a single meeting since Davin, the quiet order no longer a place of relaxation for him. Though the Warmaster had been returned to them, the lodge's actions had smacked of subterfuge, and such behavior sat ill with Taric Torgadon. The robed figure he followed was unknown to him, young, and clearly in awe of the legendary Mournival officer, which suited Torgadon fine. The warrior had clearly only achieved full Astartes status recently, but Torgadon knew that he would already be an experienced fighter. There was no room for inexperience among the sons of Horus. The months of war on Aureus, making veterans or corpses of those raised from the novitiate and scout auxiliaries. The Brotherhood might not have the abilities of the Astartes, but the technocracy could call on millions of them, and they fought with courage and honor. It only made killing them all the harder. Fighting the megarachnids of murder had been easy, their alien physiognomy repulsive to look upon, and therefore easy to destroy. The Brotherhood, though. They were so like the sons of Horus that it was as though two legions fought each other in some brutal civil war. Not one amongst the legion had failed to experience a moment of pause at such a terrible image. Torgadon was saddened as he knew that, like the Interrex before them, the Brotherhood and the Orishan technocracy would be destroyed. A voice from the darkness ahead shook him from his somber thoughts.
"Who approaches?"
"Two souls," replied the young warrior.
"What are your names?"
the figure asked, but Torgadon did not recognize the voice.
"I can't say," said Torgadon. "Pass, friends."
Torgadon and the warrior passed the guardian of the portal and entered the reserve armory. The vaulted chamber was much larger than the aft hold where meetings had commonly been held, and when he stepped into the flickering candlelit space, he could see why Targost had chosen it. Hundreds of warriors filled the armory, each one hooded and holding a flickering candle. Sergar Targost, Ezekiel Abaddon, Horus Aximand, and Malachurst stood at the center of the gathering. To one side of them stood First Chaplain Erebus. Torgadon looked around at the assembled Astartes and couldn't escape the feeling that this meeting had been called for his benefit.
"You've been busy, Sergar,"
he said.
"Been on a recruiting drive?"
"Since the War Master's recovery on Davin, our stock has risen somewhat," agreed Targost.
"So I see. Must be tricky keeping it secret now."
"Amongst the Legion, we no longer operate under a veil of secrecy."
"Then why the same pantomime to enter?"
Targost smiled apologetically.
"Tradition, you understand."
Torgadon shrugged and crossed the chamber to stand before Erebus. He stared with undisguised hostility towards the First Chaplain and said,
"You have been keeping a low profile since Davin. Captain Loken wants to speak with you."
"I'm sure he does," replied Erebus. "But I am not under his command. I do not answer to him."
"Then you'll answer to me, you bastard!"
snapped Torgadon, drawing his combat knife from beneath his robes and holding it to Erebus's neck. Cries of alarm sounded at the sight of the knife, and Torgadon saw the line of an old scar running across Erebus's neck.
"Looks like someone's already tried to cut your throat," hissed Torgadon. "They didn't do a very good job of it. But don't worry, I won't make the same mistake."
"Taric," cried Sergar Targost, "you brought a weapon? You know they are forbidden."
"Erebus owes us all an explanation,"
said Torgadon, pressing the knife against Erebus's jaw.
"This snake stole a Kinnebrak weapon from the Hall of Devices on Zenobia. He's the reason that negotiations with the Interrex failed. He's the reason the War Master was injured."
"No, Taric,"
said Abaddon, moving to stand next to him and placing a hand on his wrist.
"The negotiations with the Interrex failed because they were meant to. The Interrex consorted with Xenos breeds. They integrated with them. We could never have made peace with such people."
"Ezekiel speaks the truth," said Erebus.
"Shut your mouth,"
snapped Torgadon.
"Torgadon, put the knife down,"
said Horus Aximand.
"Please."
Reluctantly, Torgadon lowered his arm, the pleading tone of his mournful brother making him realize the enormity of what he was doing in holding a knife to the throat of another Astartes, even one as untrustworthy as Erebus.
"We are not finished," warned Torgadon,
pointing the blade at Erebus.
"I will be ready,"
promised the word-bearer.
"Both of you be silent," said Targost. "We have urgent matters to discuss that require you to listen. These last few months of war have been hard on everyone, and no one fails to see the great tragedy inherent in fighting brother humans who look so very like us. Tensions are high, but we must remember that our purpose among the stars is to kill those who will not join with us."
Torgadon frowned at such a blunt mission statement, but said nothing as Targost continued his speech.
"We are Astartes, and we were created to kill and conquer the galaxy. We have done all that has been asked of us, and more, fighting for over 2 centuries to forge the new Imperium from the ashes of old night. We have destroyed planets, torn down cultures, and wiped out entire species, all because we were so ordered. We are killers, pure and simple, and we take pride in being the best at what we do."
Cheering broke out at Targost's pronouncements, fists punching the air and hammering bulkheads. But Torgadon had seen the iterators in action enough times to recognize cued applause. This speech was for his benefit and his alone, Of that he was now certain.
Now, as the great crusade draws to a close, we are lambasted for our ability to kill. Malcontents and agitators stir up trouble in our wake with bleating cries that we are too brutal, too savage, and too violent. Our very own Lord Commander of the Army, Hector Varvarus, demands blood for the actions of our grief-stricken brothers who returned the War Master to us while he lay dying. The traitor Varvarus demands that we be called to account for these regrettable deaths, and that we be punished for trying to save the War Master.
Torgarden flinched at the word traitor, shocked that Targost would openly use such an incendiary word to describe an officer as respected as Varvarus. But as Torgarden looked at the faces of the warriors around him, he saw only agreement with Targost's sentiment.
"Even civilians now feel they have the right to call us to account," said Horace Aximand, taking up where Targost had left off and holding up a handful of parchments. "Dissenters and conspirators amongst the Remembrancers spread lies and propaganda that paint us as little better than barbarians."
Aximand circled amongst the gathering, passing out the pamphlets as he spoke.
"This one is called The Truth Is All We Have, and it calls us murderers and savages. This turbulent poet mocks us in verse, brothers. These lies circulate amongst the fleet every day."
Torgarden took a pamphlet from Aximand and quickly scanned the paper, already knowing who had written it. Its contents were scathing, but hardly amounted to sedition.
"And this one," cried Aximand. "The Lectitio Divinitatis speaks of the Emperor as a god. A god! Can you imagine anything so ridiculous? These lies fill the heads of those we are fighting for. We fight and die for them, and this is our reward, vilification and hate. I tell you this, my brothers, if we do not act now, this ship of the Imperium, which has weathered all storms, will sink through the mutiny of those on board."
Shouts of anger and calls for action echoed from the armory walls, and Torgarden did not like the ugly desire for reciprocity that he saw on the faces of his fellow warriors.
"Nice speech," said Torgarden, when the roars of anger had diminished. "But why don't you get to the point? I have a company to make ready for a combat drop." "Always the straight talker, eh, Taric?" said Aximand. "That is why you are respected and valued. That is why we need you with us, brother." "With you? What are you talking about?"
"Have you not heard a word that was said?" asked Malachurst, limping over to where Torgarden stood. "We are under threat from within our own ranks. The enemy within, Taric. It is the most insidious foe we have yet faced."
"You'll need to speak plainly, Mal," said Abaddon. "Taric needs it spelled out for him."
"Up yours, Ezekiel," said Torgarden.
"I have learned that the Remembrancer who writes these treasonous missives is called Ignace Carcassi," said Malachurst. "He must be silenced."
"Silenced? What do you mean by that?" asked Torgarden. "Given a slap on the wrist? Told not to be such a naughty boy? Something like that?"
"You know what I mean, Taric," stated Malachurst.
"I do, but I want to hear you say it."
"Very well. If you wish me to be direct, then I will be. Carcassi must die."
"You're crazy, Mal. Do you know that? You're talking about murder," said Torgarden.
"It's not murder when you kill your enemy, Taric," said Abaddon. "It's war."
"You want to make war on a poet?" laughed Torgarden. "Oh, they'll tell tales of that for centuries, Ezekiel. Can't you hear what you're saying? Anyway, the Remembrancer is under Garviel's protection. You touch Carcassi, and he'll hand your head to the War Master himself."
A guilty silence enveloped the group at the mention of Loken's name, and the lodge members in front of Torgarden shared an uneasy look. Finally, Malachurst said,
"I had hoped it would not come to this, but you leave us no choice, Taric."
Torgarden gripped the hilt of his combat knife tightly, wondering if he would need to fight his way clear of his brothers.
"Put up your knife. We're not about to attack you,"
snapped Malachurst, seeing the tension in his eyes.
"Go on,"
said Torgarden, keeping a grip on the knife anyway.
"What did you hope it would not come to?"
"Hector Varvarus claims to have spoken with the Council of Terror about events surrounding the War Master's injury, and it is certain that if he has not yet informed Melkador the Sigillite of the deaths on the embarkation deck, he soon will. He petitions the War Master daily with demands that there be justice."
And what has the War Master told him? I was there too. So was Ezekiel. You too, little Horus.
And so was Loken, finished Erebus, joining the others. He led you onto the embarkation deck, and he led the way through the crowd.
Torgadon took a step towards Erebus.
I told you to be quiet!
He turned from Erebus, and despair filled him as he saw acquiescent looks on his brothers' faces. They had already accepted the idea of throwing Garviel Loken to the wolves.
You can't seriously be considering this, Mal, protested Torgadon. Ezekiel? Horus! You would betray your sworn Morneval brother. He's already betrayed us by allowing this remembrancer to spread lies, said Aximand. No, I won't do it, swore Torgadon. You must, said Aximand. Only if you, Ezekiel, and I swear oaths that it was Loken who orchestrated the massacre will Varvaris accept him as guilty. So that's what this is all about, is it?
Asked Torgadon.
Two birds with one stone. Make Garviel your scapegoat, and you're free to murder Carcassi. How can you even consider this? The War Master will never agree to it.
Bluntly put, but you are mistaken if you think the War Master will not agree, said Targost. This was his suggestion.
No, cried Torgadon. He wouldn't.
It can be no other way, Taric, said Malak Hurst. The survival of the Legion is at stake.
Torgadon felt something inside him die at the thought of betraying his friend. His heart broke at making a choice between Loken and the Sons of Horus. But no sooner had the thought surfaced, he knew what he had to do. He sheathed his combat knife and said,
If betrayal and murder is needed to save the Legion, then perhaps it does not deserve to survive. Garviel Loken is our brother, and you would betray his honor like this. I spit on you for even thinking it.
A horrified gasp spread through the chamber, and angry mutterings closed in on Torgadon.
Think carefully, Taric, warned Malak Hurst. You are either with us or against us.
Torgadon reached into his robes and tossed something silver and gleaming at Malak Hurst's feet. The lodge medal glinted in the candlelight.
Then I am against you, said Torgadon.